Tamie v. Rockford School District 205. Mr. Hernandez.
Good morning, Judge.
Good morning.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Rene Hernandez. I represent Glenn Casimy. Glenn Casimy was employed by the Rockford School District 205 in September of 1995. Well, I'm just going to regurgitate some basic facts, but I'm sure that the court's already familiarized itself with the briefs in both instances.
I'll tell you right now, Mr. Hernandez, that the question that I am most concerned about is how you can prove in the very specialized way that the ADA uses this term that Mr. Casimy is a person with a disability.
Well, in the facts that we've cited and the facts that we put in our brief is that this is not some intermittent episodic episode. Rather, it's a mental illness.
Quite functional. I mean, he continues to work when he's at Rockford. He goes on to the New York public schools. He comes back to the Chicago public schools. And the message the Supreme Court keeps sending us is you really have to be, particularly if working is the major life activity that you're alleging you can't perform because of your disability, there's a very high bar. And I don't see in this record anything to suggest, you know, vision or walking or, you know, other fundamental life activities that he's impeded from.
Well, in the information we've provided and the record that's here, we know that Mr. Casimy suffers from several mental maladies.
Right.
He actually has breakdowns and
I don't question that at all, but that's why I began by saying in the very specialized sense that this term is used by the ADA, it doesn't mean that the person has to be in the peak of health or, you know, but there are gradations for both physical and mental illnesses, and until you fall below a certain point with either one, the ADA doesn't regard you as a quote-unquote person with a disability. And in the mental illness field, certainly we've seen some cases where it's qualified, but these are people who really practically can't get out of bed, you know, and get to work. And that doesn't seem to be this record.
Well, I think there's a significant portion of the record where Mr. Casimy is exactly like that. And his employer perceives him to be that way.
But that's only how the for a couple of weeks here and a couple of weeks there. I mean, it's not a persistent condition for him, as his history shows.
I don't think the record shows a couple of weeks, Judge, in any instance. There was a five-month gap in which he needed accommodation, where he had to basically take care of his health because he had a complete mental breakdown. Here he is as a principal. They allow him to take 5 months off. It's not an episodic time period, complete meltdown, completely disabled, as you've described, can't get out of bed, can't eat, can't write, pressure on the brain, all the things that we've submitted in our brief.
Well, but if the doctor's notes are a little bit vague about that, but the other problem, frankly, is 5 months. I mean, the statute looks for a more permanent condition.
Well, there's no cure for these mental maladies. All you can do is have maybe remission.
He's been working, though.
In some capacities, but not in the capacity as taken by Judge Reinhardt. He says, well, in Chicago, he actually had problems with his teaching problems. And, you know, everything is I don't think that it has to be a complete breakdown all the time, every day. But I certainly think it has to be something that's serious, and
well,
certainly in this case.
What case can you think of, if any, particularly in light of what the court's been saying in cases like Sutton? I mean, there's just so many cases. Sutton being the one I'm thinking about, an inability to work in a broad range of jobs rather than a specific job, that's one phrase the court looks at. I can't think of a case where a five-month either physical or mental problem that then the person manages to master enough to get back into the workforce qualifies.
Well, we're talking, that's also in a limited context, too, and I'd like to try and see if we can move that back a little. Let's talk about this in particular employer and how he was perceived and how he was treated. And certainly, the information that they had before him suggested that he was, in fact, disabled. Certainly, they perceived him as that, as that's the information he gave them. I have this disability. I have this mental illness, which is causing this lapse from work and my complete inability to work. right? And that's Ann Anderson. That's his immediate supervisor. You know, that's Mr. Carter. That's even Dr. Brown. These are the people responsible for the decision-making that which eventually took place. I mean, when you put in those events, he, and then in this instance, is perceived, if not actually disabled. I mean, the court seems to be indicating to me that in this particular case, he's not going to qualify as an ADA individual.
Well, I'm trying to explore this. I think it's a serious issue in this case. I realize you have evidence.
I concur, but we certainly have other components to it. Certainly it's a serious illness. He's not cured, but the varying degrees of its effect are certainly, I think they're relevant issues to be looked at. To the extent he's requesting an accommodation or to the extent that it actually affects his ability to do his job, I think those are relevant and important questions to be decided by this court, and maybe this court can shed light on that. But we also have the issues of how they refused his accommodation requests. Obviously the school district doesn't even know about anything else at this juncture in the time period, which is the actionable time period. They don't know anything about his condition thereafter in the future and can't tell.
Right. They do know, though, maybe jumping ahead to a pretext argument, is that this is somebody that they were about to put on a performance improvement plan back in November. Then he takes some time off because of medical issues. And they have been in the process of moving him back into the teaching field for some time before he requests his accommodation.
Well, I'll ask the court to just look at the timeline. July 2000, he's transferred to Washington School. In November of 2000, he's diagnosed with the stress.
Right, which is right about the time they want to put him on the performance improvement plan.
Exactly, but during this time period, he's gone. Right.
Not from July to November. He's at Washington School.
He's gone for 5 months.
He goes to Washington School. He works.
Does.
He works in August and September and October and November, right? And the various issues come up. Maybe it's a very difficult school to teach in. I don't know. But it's in November that he leaves for the medical.
No, Judge. That's when he's formally diagnosed.
How could the teachers have been complaining about his lesson, his performance?
He's had some work in there.
He was working.
He had some work in there.
He was working during July and August, and so they say, we're not satisfied with your work. We're going to put you on this plan.
But you have to look at the timeline. It's December 18th of 2000 is when he's actually telling or requesting a return to work. And on December 18th, that's when they have their meeting.
Right, but he doesn't leave until November. He doesn't start taking a leave of absence until November.
So there's a time period in which it's there. Well, anyways, it's part of the pretextual, and I'll address it. I'm not going to worry about that. You've got important questions. So the bigger thing is about the pretextual issue. The PIP and performance plan is a standardized program that they have, mm-hmm. and they give you 60 to 120 days to do something.
Right.
Well,
he
got zero time to do anything. And the issues that they've raised in their PIP are pretty much, from my perspective, nonsensical because, one, they complain about parents complaining because kids are suspended. Well, that happens when their kids are recalcitrant and abusive and violent. And then the next thing is they complain about the Rockford school district, the teachers complaining about him as a principal not doing what they want to do. Well, that's an adversarial relationship that unions have with management every day. Every day. And, in fact, you've seen probably gazillions of them. I mean, in that context, I mean, they're penalizing him for doing what he's done. He schedules the teachers pursuant to the school district's direction. They grievance him, and then they say, well, look, you're having problems with the teacher. I mean, you can't take two bites out of it in this particular way. Then they give him zero time to improvement for any improvement because they immediately say no, and they change him to assistant principal, and then they change him, reclassify him to teacher for a position they fully know he's not even qualified to have.
Okay.
And in this particular instance, when you looked at all our facts and our fact pattern here, I think the timing sequence, and I think that should be important to the court, the timing sequence and the series of events, their perceptions of him and what actually transpired here and the total lack of any negative evaluations against this principal. There are none. Right? We have that performance plan, but it seems to be a setup. If you look at the plan and when you look at the timelines, you look at what's happening and the people involved, And the prior accommodations to Len Ginsler, which they obviously gave him free rein, but in this particular instance, they did not, as outlined in my brief.
Mr. Hernandez, can you help me on one point?
Sure.
Was Mr. Cassamy informed at the time he was assigned to Auburn that it was placement was only temporary?
I couldn't state it as I stand here with any degree of absolute certainty, so I will not. I believe that there was a representation, but I can't attest to that.
Fine. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge. And I ask that this court grant our brief and allow this matter to be filed.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hernandez. Ms. Hoadley.
Good morning, Your Honors. Lori Hoadley, counsel. Listening to the questions this morning, it appears that the primary issue or the focus of the court has been on whether or not Mr. Cassamy is a disabled individual under the Americans with Disabilities Act, and it has been the district's position, of course, that he is not. And for a number of reasons, first of all, he was not precluded from working in a broad class of jobs. His own physician indicated that his mental problems were situational in nature. Mr. Cassamy had no difficulty working for any other employer prior to or any other location prior to working at Washington School, for the Rockford Public Schools even. And he didn't have difficulty of any significant nature working thereafter, even with the Chicago Public Schools. Mr. Cassamy.
But of course, as Mr. Hernandez points out, at the time the Rockford School District is taking these actions, they don't have a crystal ball into the future, realizing that Mr. Cassamy is going to have this future. So don't you think we need to look at the evidence before them?
Sure. And looking at the timeline that you were discussing, Mr. Cassamy was assigned in July to Washington School, and there had not been any indication at that time that Mr. Cassamy had any kind of mental issues or mental difficulties at the school district. On November 21st is the first time.
Excuse me, what are the age of the students at Washington School?
It's a middle school. It's sixth, seventh, and eighth graders. Very difficult ages.
Yeah. Right.
That's not in the record.
We'll take judicial notice.
Yeah, judicial notice.
Yes. And so when he's assigned there, there were no indications of any problems at all. November 21st is the first instance when he submits in a doctor's note to the school district, and that doctor's note only states anxiety and stress. He needs to be off 2 weeks.
Up until then, his attendance had been regular as far as the records show?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and no medical notes or mental difficulties or any suggestion of mental difficulties. There were suggestions of significant performance problems. There were complaints from parents and from his staff, the teachers, and his administrators.
He had been a principal prior to this assignment, had he not?
Oh, sure. He had been for a number of years.
Middle school?
Elementary school. He had been with the Rockford Public Schools, but prior to that he had a lengthy history with other schools, both private and public. I think he had been a teacher about 25 years or an administrator around 20 years.
But had he been in a middle school context?
Not in a public school context, I believe. And certainly not with the Rockford School District. And that is a large district. And again, it has its own issues, which are not necessarily in the record either.
We've had our issues.
We're very familiar with the Rockford School District. I was going to ask you, in terms of this volume of complaints that come in, I mean, Mr. Hernandez makes the common sense point that parents are probably not going to be leaping for joy if they find out that they're child has been suspended and so on. Is there anything in the record to indicate that the volume of complaints registered about Mr. Cassamy was somehow extraordinary, somehow more than other principals in similarly situated schools?
No, there's nothing to indicate that at all. What we do know is that Mr. Cassamy had a new superintendent at the time, that he had a new supervisor who was newly assigned as an assistant superintendent as well. So there are new individuals coming into the district, but there is no indication that that the volume of complaints from parents or that's simply not in the record at all. But it was certainly something that the superintendent and the assistant superintendent who had been addressing these issues had to deal with at that time.
So but did again, they say anything in their depositions about why it was? I mean, one assumes that there's a certain noise level that goes on, and you mm-hmm. don't put people on performance improvement plans just because a regular amount of complaining is happening at any particular institution. And so I wonder if there's just any reason to suggest that this is not, as a matter of fact, a pretext for, you know, getting rid of this guy who's now proving to be more difficult.
No, other than the decision to get rid of Mr. Cassamy occurred prior to, well, it occurred about 3 weeks after he had went on a leave of absence and after he had returned without any restriction from work.
So the note from the doctor says no restriction. Actually, they tell him to, I assume, sort of renew his teaching certificate or something like that. He didn't.
Well, at that time, they didn't know he didn't have a teaching certificate. They knew he had and they learned that later.
Okay.
And I see my time is up. We just asked that.
Well, it's not up, but you're not mandated to use it either. So it's your decision. You have a couple of minutes.
Oh, well, thank you. Just with the timelines, the decision of to reclassify or to reassign Mr. Cassamy to a teacher position was made. It was made on or about December 18th, 2000, and then the actual occurrence of the reclassification, which is a pay change. So the superintendent can reassign without any pay change, but the reclassification with the pay change occurred in March of 2001.
But aren't those two different steps? I was of the impression that the reassignment was, as you say, something that the superintendent could do, perhaps, you know, for a short term or something. Mm-hmm. And it is, in fact, a significant move, actually, then to go on and reclassify. So shouldn't we view that as a separate event?
It is a separate event to a certain extent. It is the superintendent who would recommend that to the board, and then the board would make the decision one way or the other.
And did the superintendent's recommendation to the board predate his return from that leave?
There's nothing in the record, but I would doubt that very much. I mean, it would come right around the same time in which the board had issued the notice, typically.
Okay.
Mr. Cassamy was clearly not an individual with a disability, and I think we cited a number of cases to substantiate that. Webb versus Coate and Schneiker versus Fortis are two of the primary cases, one where an individual could clearly work in another location or another facility, and the Schneiker case dealt with an individual who just simply couldn't work for a certain supervisor. And while they both had significant health issues, the fact that they could work elsewhere or for another individual precluded them from being determined to be an individual with a disability. Moreover, it was a short duration. I think there was something mentioned about 5 months. It was from November 21st, 2000 to about March 26, 2001, in which he was precluded from working. So it's a four-month period, but 4 or 5 months, it's still limited to that short duration or short time frame. And so we would ask this court to affirm the district court's decision.
Did Mr. Cassamy attempt to return to work after the reclassification?
Yes, he returned. They had created a position for him at Auburn High School, Your Honor. It was a special assistant principalship where he was doing a special project, and that was just helping to open up the technology wing of the high school, and that position was then eliminated.
Thank you,
Your Honor.
Mr. Hernandez, your time has expired, but you may have another minute. You have some response to comments of Ms. Hoadley.
Thank you, Judge. I appreciate it. It's just that when you look at the timing sequence and what this court has previously done, I'm looking to determine what time of the events should actually matter when they make the decisions. Well, we know on December 18th they had a meeting about Mr. Cassamy when he called in and he's doing these things. He's telling them this is what's wrong with me, and they determine he's very ill, and he, as you stated, problematic now for them. He's not going to be able to do what they want him to do with additional problems. And then at that point, it kicks in. Well, then he's gone for an extensive period of time. And then on the eve, he turns in his accommodation request. He's immediately denied. And then 7 days later, he's immediately reclassified. And they're very distinct because my client is not a teacher. He's an administrator, lifelong administrator, no qualifications in the state of Illinois to practice or to teach, period. And they knew that. They knew that in December 18th. And, in fact, I think that was part of the record in Ann Anderson when she made that determination. They wanted to put him in as a math teacher. So with that said.
Is an administrator track such that you never have to be qualified as a teacher in Illinois?
In Illinois, that's true. And in other states as well. I mean, you can be an administrative track and never be a teacher. The preferential.
I mean, qualified as a teacher. I don't mean necessarily. Practices.
The preferential practice that I've been able to glean out of my experience with Rockford School District is that you in fact have your administrative requisites, and then you have your teaching certificate to boot, and that allows you to do the whole gambit, not just administrative. Right. Thank you, Judge. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks to both counsel. Case is taken under advisement. Court will proceed to the fifth case of the day.